Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Now, here we go. Hour 2, live in L.A. It's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy, you know how much I hate the NBA MVP award.
Yeah.
I think it's stupid.
Well, the award itself isn't stupid, but the process for how we select.
Idiotic.
And by we, not us. How it is selected.
It's absurd.
It's not very scientific.
It's like, who's got the best story?
Yeah. But it's, then, like, the story, sometimes, because, like, last year it wasn't who was the best story. It was, well, we gave it to Giannis the year before, and his numbers are better this year, so we got to give it to him this year.
Yeah.
And then other years it's stories, and then other years it's records, and who knows, you know. It's whatever the way the wind blows.
If I am at a restaurant sitting at a table, and an NBA MVP voter sits next to me, I ask for the check and leave the restaurant. I cannot be seen in public.
That's not true. Chris Broussard has an
only one
MVP vote, right?
Only one. I've walked up and slugged guys right in the forehead. I think it's the dumbest. It's insane. Nobody understands valuable.
Well, yeah. So I think it's poorly named.
Yeah. It's not like if it was fastest sports car, you wouldn't give it to most productive. You'd give it to fastest sports car.
Correct.
That's the Olympics. It's like high jump. Oh, okay.
Whoever jumps the highest.
Right. Like, that's a 100-meter dash. Okay, at 100 meters, whoever finished. NBA MVP, we don't give valuable. We just go stats and stories. So I would give you my top five this morning, and you're gonna not believe it, but again, it's called valuable. This is who I would give the MVP to.
Okay.
Number five.
LeBron James. Hold on. You're going to freak out. LeBron's played 41 games. He's going to come back and play the final 11 or 12. That'll give him 53 of 72 games. That is three quarters of a season. Do the math. That's almost 75% of games. The Lakers have not beaten a team over 500 that's fully stocked since he left. They beat the Nets without James Harden and the Jazz without Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. They have plummeted defensively. They have plummeted offensively. They're the 27th best offense in the league without LeBron James. They won the title last year. I don't care that he took 25% of the games off. Not playing. They have plummeted as a franchise. They are a 500 team that can't beat good teams. But in the NBA, there's so many bad ones, they can stay at 500. LeBron's five.
Number four.
Steph Curry. He's going to have better numbers than when he won MVP, but here's the key. It's a bad basketball team that is 1-7 when he doesn't play. When he does play, they have a winning record and will make it into the playoffs. This is not a good team. Klay Thompson's out. Wiseman's now hurt. It's Kelly Oubre's talented, but Draymond's past his prime. Not a very good team until he plays. And then his numbers this year are better than his MVP season he'd before.
Number three.
I'll say it again, Jimmy Butler. He is a 500-to-1 shot to win it, Jimmy Butler. This is a young team bordering sometimes on immature. Bam, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. He has to babysit some of these guys. They were early in the year when he got COVID. He was out for, like, you know, 10 games a month. They were atrocious defensively. Now they're top five in the league defensively. So, unlike a James Harden, you get everything on both ends of the floor. They're a bad basketball team, and that's with Eric Spoelstra, who's a Hall of Fame coach. They're 6-11 in the East when he doesn't play. 24-17 when he does. Again, valuable. He's got some LeBron qualities. Like, he, on both ends of the floor, dramatically changes the effort and maturity of your team.
Number two.
Nikola Jokic, Denver, bad body, I understand. But Jamal Murray, second best player, top 20 player in the league, he's out. They're 7-1 this year when Jamal Murray doesn't play. And again, after Jamal Murray, Michael Porter's a young kid. He's on pace to become the first player in the league history to average 25, 10, and 8 assists and shoot 55 from the field. But it's not a statistical award. He is the best passing big man from Bill Walton. He gets so many players on this team open looks and good looks because you often have to double him. He's the classic value additive. He makes players better. Westbrook makes everybody worse. That's why Jokic, to me, is valuable.
Number one.
Chris Paul. Do you understand this? 11 straight winning seasons. Now, that wouldn't be impressive if you played for, like, you know, a well-coached team. No, that's with the Hornets, Suns, tanking Thunder, Clippers, Rockets. 11 straight winning years. By the way, the Suns have the second best record in the NBA. Now, do you understand for 11 years in a sport where almost everybody makes the playoffs, they were a tire fire. Phoenix was miles out of the playoffs. By the way, last year, Oklahoma City wanted to tank. Chris Paul got him a 4 or 5 seed in the West. He leaves. Now they're on an 11-game losing streak. Next to LeBron James, nobody in the NBA has the ability to change your basketball team's win-loss standings. Nobody, except Chris Paul. Doesn't dunk, he's not flashy, doesn't shoot threes, so nobody loves Chris Paul. So, Joy, what do you make of it?
I think people are going to be very upset, but...
The LeBron one freaks people out. People say Joel Embiid. The Sixers win when Joel Embiid takes nights off. The Warriors don't with Steph, the Suns don't with Chris, the Lakers can't beat good teams without LeBron.
The award isn't who is having the best season. It's MVP. It would actually be more interesting if they made the evaluation based off of who is actually the most valuable and not just who's having the best season.
Yeah, we talk.
Or the most interesting season.
And by the way, I actually think if you voted on it, just think about this. Anytime you give an award, so many of these sports do it wrong. Like baseball will hand out the awards and the season's over and we're talking football. Like I always thought baseball hands out their awards at the wrong time. Because all these leagues, when you hand out awards, part of what you like when you hand out awards as a league is for people to talk about it. You know, leagues want to get 2 or 3 days of play. If you actually voted on it to be most valuable and that was your list, it would be great arguments.
Right.
It would be incredible arguments. Those are the most valuable players in the league. And again, you'll knock LeBron. Okay, he played 41, got hurt. If he comes back with 11 or 12 to play, he's going to play 73 to 74% of the Laker games. There is nothing here says you have to play every game. Nothing here that says that. The bottom line, the Lakers' offensive ranking and defensive ranking have plummeted since LeBron left. And we know it's not AD because they have a winning record when AD doesn't play and LeBron does.
Yeah, people are going to be mad Giannis isn't on this list either.
Okay, that's a great question. So I don't have Embiid on it. My takeaway is when Embiid's taking nights off, Simmons can get to the basket easier, Sixers can win in the East. So Giannis, a great example. So this year, who got hurt on that team? Drew Holiday. They couldn't win. Giannis is not the most... He's the best player on his team.
Right.
Drew Holiday's the most valuable player on the team. He's not the best.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They've made it into who is having the best season. And then the word best kind of moves depending on what's happening. So it's like the best / most interesting or the best / best statistical season. Or if their statistical season was better than the year before where they won it the year before in Giannis. Right. Chris Paul is actually, if we're being fair and evaluating on the most value, Chris Paul is the MVP this year.
It's really not even just Phoenix. Look at Oklahoma City without him. They're arguably this morning the worst NBA team. They don't have the worst record. They're the worst team. Last year, they were a tough out with Chris Paul in the playoffs. So I first noticed Dan Mullen years ago. So Urban Meyer's my friend. I've known Urban for a long time. And I lived on the West Coast, and this guy named Urban Meyer came to Utah, and he started beating all these Pac-12 teams. And, you know, like Cal's and Oregon's, and I was telling my buddies, I'm like, I don't know who Urban Meyer is, but they don't have the NFL players of all these Oregon's and all these other teams out West, and they're beating them. Well, under him was a guy named Dan Mullen, and Dan Mullen was under Urban for 3 or 4 of those jobs, including Utah, Florida. Then Dan gets a job at Mississippi State, of course, had Dak Prescott. Dan's now gone to Florida, a powerhouse, and they're off to a great start, led the nation in his 3 years there. A lot of wins, led the nation in offense. He is one of the really creative, smart guys. And I asked this a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Kyle Trask. I said, is Kyle Trask good? Or is Dan Mullen make all his quarterbacks look this good? I don't know. So Dan Mullen now, Florida Gator football coach, joining us live. First of all, Coach, you've done a great job. Thank you so much. I covered the Gators years and years ago when I worked in Tampa. It's the loudest stadium I've ever been in. And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, great to be with you. I appreciate it. I love that lead-in right there. That was very complimentary.
Let's start with Kyle Pitts. So one of the things you're known for, you're probably the most ripped-off coach in the SEC. People take all your schemes, and you move guys around, and you very much, you make multiple sets. You make it very tough to defend. When did you first notice with Kyle Pitts? Take me to the moment, Coach, a practice or a game when you went, oh, boy, I can put him anywhere on the field.
Well, I think he came in as a freshman, and we played him mostly a wide receiver. And had him flexed out. We had some depth at tight end. He was still growing and maturing in his strength, and we didn't have great depth of wide receiver. And all of a sudden, we put him out there as our X receiver, and he made some unbelievable plays, was learning how to be a route runner, learning how to use his body and his leverage, and thought, okay, this guy has a chance to be special. But all of a sudden, he came back the next year. He grew into his tight end body, and then that's when it became fun, because now you have this guy with that's 6'6", 240 pounds, that can play tight end. He can set the edge. They got to respect him as a tight end within the running game in just how they fit the runs, how they set the defense. But then you start moving around and you create the matchups. And he's just, he has elite wide receiver skills, but he sets the matchups that you get him on people that they don't want to have covering him.
Can he block at all, Coach? That's the knock on him. Can he block at all?
Absolutely. You're not going to make a living. You're silly if you have him and you're going to say, hey, this guy's going to be a blocking tight end for us. But now they're going to have to try to create a matchup. Who are they going to put on him? So if all of a sudden they're going to say, okay, we got to have a bigger safety on him, or a bigger corner on him, and you put him into the core of the formation, well, that safety or corner now has to come fit in the core. He has to fit the run place. Yeah. So he can cover up defensive end. He's not going to make a living knocking him off the ball. He can cover up. He can set the edge. He can set the point on the run game. But now if you try to create a matchup, now you put a corner or a nickel on him, he's going to blow those guys off the ball. Then he becomes a dominant blocker within the matchup that you've created at the point of attack.
So I got to be honest, Kyle Trask, when I first watched him, I thought he was a bit of a plotter. He's talented, but not much of a mover. And I thought to myself, he feels a little bit like a statue. Then I watched his pro day. It looked like he'd lost weight. He was a little more cut up. And it did look like... It did. I was like, it looked like he changed his body a little. Here's my question. Does he have an NFL arm to you?
Absolutely. I think here's where you miss in his athleticism. He did. I looked at him at pro day. I'm like, boy, he was out in California working out. He must have got on one of those diets out there in California, right? I mean, all slimmed up. I think his athleticism, if you watch his small area athleticism, his ability to slide and move within the pocket, and when you're 6'5", 240 pounds, and your ability to slide and move in the pocket, he's athletic enough to create, to extend. He's not going to beat you as a dynamic scrambler or a huge extender of plays. He's going to extend plays in a short frame moving around the pocket, but he can see over everybody. He has great anticipation. He has great accuracy within his throws. So, like anything, and I heard you say this in a great compliment of coaches, but if you watch coaches, great coaches, they're going to put their guys in position to do what they do well. Yeah, Tom Brady's never going to be mistaken this dynamic athletic runner, but he's played for two great head coaches that have always put him in a position to do what he does well. Peyton Manning, great success when you put him in a position to do what he does well. Now, on the flip side of it, you can go to a Lamar Jackson, but they put him, the coaches put him in a position to do what he does well. So if you take Kyle and say, hey, listen, we're going to have a guy that's going to be really smart, really prepared, extremely accurate with the ball, he's going to be able to slide, extend in short area, sliding around the pocket, finding throwing windows. He's going to be really successful. And I think that is the key, and that's the key to the coach, to put him in the position to do that.
I remember watching Dak Prescott, and I said when he came out of college, I said he reminds me of Tebow, but with a better arm. He has an NFL arm, whereas Tim was and they both have a lot of intangibles I liked. I don't think either one throw the ball like, Aaron Rodgers. Are you a little surprised? I mean, because one of the things that jumps out to me with Dak is the intangibles. He had a moment years ago, Coach, and my audience made fun of me for this, but he had a moment years ago when he was on the sideline and he was just walking up the sideline and he walked by a garbage can and he threw a cup into it. He had a sip and it didn't go into the garbage can. He went back and picked it up and put it in the garbage can. And I said, that's a conscientious kid. And I said, that tells me something. And everybody in my audience says, you're an idiot. That doesn't mean anything. But there is something about Dak that when did you spot it? What was different about him?
You know, it was really funny. It actually goes back to high school. We had an elite camp, and he came to a camp early on. And, you know, we wanted to love him. And he didn't throw the ball well. He wasn't very big or exceptionally fast, you know. But everyone said, hey, boy, he is a winner, the high school coach. And everyone looks and says, he just makes everyone around him better. So it became one of these. We wanted to love him. We gave him some things to work on. He came back to the elite camp a couple of weeks later. And we do kind of this thing in the weight room, hyping these kids up with all these great recruits, all your top players. And our strength coach came running up to me and said, we need to offer that kid and make him our quarterback immediately. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I've never seen the intangibles in a human being like he has. He just took over a workout of elite recruits, and he knows nobody, and every one of them are ready to follow him wherever he goes. And I said, boy, I hope he can throw the ball a little better than last time. Because he didn't throw very well. We walked out, and here was the great thing. You know what? He didn't throw it exceptionally well that day. But everything I asked him to improve on 6 weeks earlier, he had improved on. And I thought, and I said, you know what? If he can work, if he can take those steps in that short 6 week period, and he is the ultimate it guy, we can go work with that. And I saw that in that workout. So we got him. And you know what? He was a much better freshman year. He was okay. Much better passer his sophomore year. Came back much better, much, much better player his junior year. He came back his senior year. And even though if you go back to his college career, his junior year is when he had all the hype. We were the number one team in the country. He was a superior player his senior year to his junior year. And then all of a sudden I thought, thinking, you know what? He still is going to continue to improve as a passer. He is going to continue to improve his game. But if you ever want to build an organization around somebody, this is the guy to do it. This is the guy that can lead you. And I remember an NFL team said, boy, can he carry the team to a Super Bowl? I said, I don't know if he has the talent to put the whole team on his back and flat carry you to a Super Bowl as Aaron Rodgers or someone that you mentioned. But I'm going to tell you what, he can lead a team to a Super Bowl. And I think that is the difference with him. And then you're going to see, if you watch every year in the NFL, he's a much better player the next year. That goes back to your personality, his character, and who he is. And that's what makes him so special. But I'm going to tell you what, I don't know. I'm a big Dak fan. You watch the Cowboys team when he was on the team playing and when he wasn't this past year. And it wasn't just the skill set or his talent. It was the personality of the team, and that's what makes him different, is his leadership of running and leading that whole organization and the performance of everybody around him.
Finally, Coach, Dan, how good is Dan Mullen here? This is great stuff. I love Urban. He's a friend. Everywhere he's gone, he's worked. You know him better than anybody. I think he's going to work in the NFL because I think he's a quick learner. I think he's just a guy that would succeed in investments, in college, in broadcasting. Urban's just one of those guys. What's something I don't know about him? Like when you work with him, what's the secret sauce that you saw that maybe you've borrowed as a coach?
Well, I think this. I think one, he's learned to adapt to his situation, you know. And if you look at his coaching career, to be successful at Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, Ohio State, very, very different schools, very different organizations, different leagues, different style of player, different recruiting, different everything. And had great success at each of those. His ability to adapt to the players he has, his ability to motivate the players he has, and his ability to learn. And one thing I think that people maybe haven't talked about is look at the staff that he's put together. He didn't go, say, call, hey, I want to go back and get my staff from Florida or Ohio State and bring them in here to the Jaguars. Okay, his offensive staff, you know, in bringing in Bevel and Schottenheimer, you know, I mean, guys with pro experience. Defensive staff. So he has this fine mix of guys that even though he hasn't been in the NFL a lot, he has some veteran NFL coaches on his staff. And I think his ability to just lead and run and organize and be a CEO of an organization, he does that as well as anybody, of motivating all, not just the players, but motivating the coaches, holding everybody accountable and getting everybody on the same page to become their best is what he's done to be really successful in the coaching profession.
What a pleasure to have you. By the way, I looked at your schedule this morning. You get Bama and Georgia at home, so that's not bad. I mean, you got to reload a little bit on offense. You don't have Kyle Pitts or Trask, but I'd rather...
Well, hey, as you said, the Swamp's a lot. We get to play Georgia and Jacksonville, so that's kind of a 50-50.
Yeah.
But I will say this. If that Swamp you see in the picture behind me, if hopefully we get back to a little bit of normalcy, if we can pack that swamp on when Alabama rolls in, it'll be one of the loudest stadiums in the country next season.
Yeah, I've said this before. The two loudest stadiums I've been in, the Swamp and Autzen Stadium in Oregon, before they rebuilt it and it was built into the ground. You can't hear yourself think. 5 feet from my producer in Florida, I couldn't hear him. 5 feet, need to hear, could not hear him. Dan, it's great meeting you. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Have a great day. Go Gators.
All right. Dan Mullen, coach of Florida. How good was he? By the way, why does he win? I mean, you think he can recruit a little bit? Let me ask him about anything.
Look at the, you know, type of things he's evaluating in players, too.
Just really good. Yeah. Florida's good. Yeah, that place is, it's built up. So there's a reason Oregon was sold out. It was built into the ground, and Gainesville's built up. And you can't, no. I remember the producer I was next to, Kevin O'Donnell. He's a big Gator fan. And he took me up there. He goes, "You're not going to believe the stadium." And I think they played like Peyton Manning or something huge. He is me to my microphone. He's talking to me. Can't hear a word. I'm like, I can't hear you. I can't hear a word. And he's literally here to the microphone. Crazy. Pac-10 fans, Pac-12 fans, take out Oregon. Don't have any under. The SEC's different. It's just totally different. All right, good stuff. Rick Bucher, Greg Jennings, all sorts of stuff coming up.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, the NASCAR Cup Series heads to Talladega Super Speedway for the Geico 500. The high-speed action starts Sunday at 2 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Dan Mullen, great to have you in. By the way, if Nick Saban's watching, your rival's coming on this show. You better make time. Pretty soon Florida is going to surpass you if Nick's not out there coming on the Herd. Like a good luck charm to these coaches. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
We're so easily swayed in the media. You give us a great interview, we're like,
whatever you
we're
want.
We're like the hard eye emoji. It was a great Dak story, too. I love that Dak story.
Yep.
Well, Chris Paul is now on fifth in the NBA's all-time assist list. He recorded 13 assists last night against the Bucks for 10,145 in his career. That moved him ahead of Magic Johnson. So he now only trails John Stockton, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, and Mark Jackson.
Okay, and here's what's amazing about this. He's moved around to a bunch of teams.
Right.
So he's had to have different coaches. He's had to have different systems. He's rarely played with a star.
Right.
For long term. So this isn't Magic who gets Kareem and Worthy. No. Chris Paul's bounced around on terrible teams where they don't have a dominant scorer. Like Stockton got Malone for 15 years. Magic gets Kareem and Worthy. Chris Paul gets a bag of chips and boom, fifth all time.
No, yes. If you look at the teams he's been on, that's what makes this all the more impressive. He's averaging 15.7 points, 4.6 rebounds, and 8.8 assists.
Where do you think he'll finish in the MVP voting?
I don't even know if he has odds right now.
What do you mean? He has no odds.
I mean, I don't know. He didn't a couple weeks ago.
That is so embarrassing for the league. That
he's 150 to 1, I think.
It's so stupid. What is that? Fourth? Fifth?
Look, we just discussed this at the top. You gave your very controversial MVP list,
It was
MVP.
Controversial?
No, I think they just need to define what the MVP is and really, truly stick to most valuable. Most valuable. And it's not a postseason award, so I don't mind that what happens, that this award is reflective of what happens during the regular season.
Yeah.
Because so often fans are like, well, oh, they didn't do anything in the postseason. Well, like, it's not about the postseason.
Yeah,
there is a postseason
the votes
award,
are in.
Award. It's called the finals MVP.
Right.
And sometimes that goes to people that we don't understand.
Right.
So it's a regular season award, and I'm okay with that because the regular season should have some value. Like, we're constantly talking about, you know, how it's diminished every single year because of players not playing and whatnot. So I do think he is the MVP this year. They're second in the West. They're 41-16. But he's tied for 12th on Fox Bet for MVP. Devin Booker has better odds than him.
Oh, okay. That is so embarrassing. Devin Booker's got better odds. Oh, my God. Okay. Honestly, give up your media credentials. Honestly.
Listen, Devin Booker's an amazing player, but Devin Booker was on the team last year.
And wasn't that valuable in terms of wins?
Because that's not what it's about. It's not who is the best player. or who is having the best season.
Or who is more fun to watch.
Or who has the best story. It's what is most valuable.
Devin Booker's got better odds.
Yes. So Anthony Davis is only days away from making his Lakers return. Frank Vogel said that AD got some good work in on Monday and has a chance to come back for their game Thursday against the Mavs. But the team does plan to limit him to around 15 minutes per game. LeBron is still reportedly weeks away from returning. Vogel said he's progressed to some light work on the court. They lost to the Jazz 111-97 last night in what was not a very competitive game. They are 14-16 since AD got hurt in February and 7-9 without AD and LeBron. They have 14 games left in the regular season.
They've done a good job to tread water. They beat the crappy teams. They're hit and miss against the middle, and they can't beat the good teams. And that's what you are with that. By the way, though, that's what a starless team, that's pretty good for a starless team.
I think it's actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what other team you take their two best players, and their two best players are LeBron and AD, by the way.
Well, the only one would be the Nets.
Who are capable of, like LeBron, not necessarily AD, but LeBron is capable of elevating an average squad to a higher level.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We haven't really seen AD do that. So, yes, I think the Nets are probably the only other team where you take their top two stars, but the Nets have three.
Right.
The Lakers do not. So, yes, I think they've done a good job of treading water. I hope that they can get LeBron and AD back while there's still some regular season games left, because there is some value to getting back into basketball shape and getting, you know, not doing that work in the playoffs. They're fifth in the West right now. All right. So I thought I made this decree very clear. I'm going to have to repeat myself again. So just maybe we just clip this and send it out to the world. Joy Taylor making the rules. Let's not compare guys who have never played in the NFL to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Please, please, let's not do this. Well, Joe Namath has added his name to the list of people who see similarities between two quarterbacks.
The Alabama quarterback reminds me a bit of, maybe I wouldn't call it slow, but gradual footwork that developed into good footwork of a guy that came out of college and he's won 7 Super Bowls. Jones is not fleet of foot, but he might be the best player of the bunch. I do see Jones comparable to Brady when he was coming out, maybe even ahead of Brady when Brady was coming out of Michigan.
No, that's not the case. He's not as good as Tom Brady. Tom Brady got drafted by a baseball team. Tom Brady was a better athlete. Tom Brady's bigger. Tom Brady had a better arm.
Look, nobody gets credit for Tom Brady except for Tom Brady. Tom Brady got drafted in the 6th round, okay?
Right.
So I don't want to hear about, like, oh, yeah, we were taking a risk on this guy. No,
yeah.
He got drafted in the 6th round. Nobody knew anything about Tom Brady coming out of college, all right? Tom Brady is responsible for Tom Brady's success. However, Tom Brady did get paired with Bill Belichick, who is widely considered to be the greatest coach of all time. So that's what's going to happen. That's what we're talking about here. It's also, I feel like it's disrespectful to Tom Brady. It's just a smidge disrespectful to Tom Brady.
People are also saying this. Here's what I hear. Well, if he ends up like Kirk Cousins, then the Niners are good. And my takeaway is, you would have given up multiple first round picks. Kirk Cousins got drafted in the 4th round.
Right.
Or third or 4th round. Like, no. I'm not saying Mac Jones can't play in the league. The Niners gave up multiple first round picks to get him. You got to be better than Kirk Cousins if that's what you're giving up.
You have to be better than Kirk Cousins. And similar to what's happening with Miami and Tua, you're going to be compared to your draft class. So Tua is going to be evaluated on the level of Herbert and Burrow.
And he looks awful compared to them.
Okay, now, and similarly, you're going to be compared to the draft classes after you as well. Like, one before, one after. You're usually in that, like, bunch, right? But let's stick it to that draft class. So Mac Jones is going to be compared to Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields. They're all going to be evaluated against each other. And at the 3rd pick, you had your choice of 3.
Listen, if you want to drive a Kia, go ahead. But you can't pay $100,000 for a Kia. If you want to draft Mac Jones, fine. You can't give up multiple firsts to draft Mac Jones. That's my takeaway.
I mean, if he ends up being Tom Brady, sure. Like, give up the stadium. But why are we comparing anyone? Can we just not compare anyone? Like, there's just a couple players we should just keep out. Like,
2 or 3.
Let's like not compare anyone to Montana. Let's not compare anyone to Tom Brady. Let's just not do that.
Right.
It's very unfair. I feel like it's a little disrespectful to them. And it's really unfair to the player. Like, we're holding Mac Jones that he's supposed to be Tom Brady now?
Yeah. It's insane. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping
by. By the way,
the Herd Live.
I was
news.
Talking about, I love Steph Curry, but this is the worst defensive year I've ever seen. A buddy just sent me this. He goes, you know how much easier it is to shoot on the road in the NBA when there's no fans in the arena? It feels like a scrimmage. There are 51 players shooting 40% or higher from three in the NBA this year. That's almost double last year, over double year before last year. So it's always been like 25, 26, 27, 51 this year. You're playing in a scrimmage. There's no fans. You're just. It's a scrimmage with many of the stars and the best players taking nights off. Steph doesn't have to face Ben Simmons or Jaylen Brown. It's nothing against Steph. But this is the worst defensive year ever. Now, we do have reasons for it. Guys aren't just, it's a condensed schedule.
Yeah, but just perhaps this season is maybe an outlier.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an offensive outlier. Next year, the numbers will come back. And that'll, you know, I'm just saying, it's just take a deep breath. Add context to what's happening now in the NBA. I mean, Zion's numbers look like wilt. I mean, you look at his numbers, it's like, what? Nobody's going to take a charge from Zion in a condensed season. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody takes a charge in a scrimmage, and that's what it kind of feels like.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For all your last-minute Valentine's Day needs, 1-800-FLOWERS, Sweet Streets. By the way, when is Valentine's Day? I thought it was February. Isn't it?
February 14th.
Oh, this is supposed to be Mother's Day.
Mother's Day, yes. Mother's Day is
good
coming.
Catch by me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very
observant. It's trying to make me nervous. I'm like,
Your last minute Mother's Day needs, it says Valentine's Day. Go to 1-800-FLOWERS. Put in the code HERD. Rick Bucher, senior writer, Fox Sports NBA analyst, covered the league since the early 90s, is joining us now live. By the way, you're in the Bay Area. Everybody loves Curry. He's putting up the best numbers of his career. Of course, this year, everybody's putting up offensive numbers. Are you surprised at he's literally gone up another level than his entire career? They're a bad team when he doesn't play. Are you a little surprised by it?
Overall, they are exactly where I thought they would be. I thought they would be fighting for a play-in spot, and that's exactly where they are. In terms of what he's doing, scoring-wise, what he's done in expanding his three-point range, the attention that he's getting, I mean, it's remarkable that he's making the shots that he's making. And the percentages bear that out. But you said all his numbers have gone up, and that is not true. Every other aspect of his game is suffering, whether it's because of the talent around him or simply because it takes so much energy to take the shots that he's taking. His assist-to-turnover ratio is the worst of his career. His defensive rating is the worst of his career. So I know people have fallen in love with what Steph is doing, and I myself am amazed at the shots that he's able to make with the attention that he's receiving. But let's not confuse that with he's having an all-around great performance at this point. He's not doing that.
So I look at Brooklyn, and I've said this. We tend to fall in love with pretty teams. Gonzaga was pretty. Baylor was tough. Kansas City was pretty. Tampa Bay's defense was tough. It's hard to win a title when you're pretty, but you don't have an edge to you. When the Warriors were pretty, they still had Klay and Draymond defensively and Andre Iguodala off the bench. The Bulls could be pretty, but they were a great defensive team. I look at Brooklyn. They're really pretty, but they haven't played together. Mm-hmm. KD's hurt again. Kyrie's still erratic. It's funny. I think we're falling for they're the best watch in the league, but I think they're going to, they struggle with Andre Drummond. What about Embiid or Giannis? What do you make of this team that has played essentially, if you look at the minutes their big three have played together, it's like four games. It's insane. Yeah. What do you make of them going into the playoffs?
So there's two parts of this. First of all, Colin, I'm glad to have you come on board. I've been saying this since the beginning of the year, that I expected them to be the most explosive offense. I expected that to produce a great regular season. But the game slows down and becomes more physical in the postseason. We've seen that happen with James Harden time after time after time. He's a wonder in the regular season. Well, they call the game a little bit different during the regular season. You're getting to the free throw line a lot more often than you are in the postseason. And they simply don't have that. For everybody who says, oh, they got all these closers, and how are you going to stop all these closers? Well, how are they going to stop anybody? We just saw this against the Miami Heat. Without Jimmy Butler, the Miami Heat outscored them 8-0. In the final 3.5 minutes. And I know James Harden wasn't there, Kevin Durant wasn't there. But neither one of those guys, maybe Kevin Durant to a certain extent, but James Harden isn't going to suddenly change your defense in the final 2 minutes. And Kevin Durant can, but he has to be healthy and willing to do that. So I'm glad to hear that. Now, this is the issue that I have overall with the league, is that it has now become a thing where not playing is somehow a benefit to being a better team in the postseason. Like, when did that happen? I'm right now, I wish they would institute a rule. You know what? If you're going to be out, then you can't sit on the bench styling your fits. I know it's all supporting the team and all that. I'm just tired of seeing all these superstars who are cashing out on the sidelines, dressed to the nines, and aren't playing 10, 15 games at a time. And we're all looking at it going, oh, these guys are really sharp. They're not playing. They're saving it all for the end. Let's see how well that ultimately works out. I know it happened last year. Let's not take anything from the bubble and think that that formula is going to work in a season like this.
But let's segue the Lakers, though. AD's history is he's not going to give you 82 games. And I would make an argument the Lakers are just saying, big fella, come back with six to play and go. Could I not argue that in the Lakers' case, it works?
You could, simply because they have a little more institutional knowledge. These guys have been there. They've done it together. But you're still asking AD and LeBron to go from 0 to 60. And this is a little bit different than last year, again, in the shutdown, because they had those first 8 games. They were already seated where they wanted to be seated. They could cruise through those 8 games and get dialed up. And oh, by the way, everybody else was starting from that position. And AD and LeBron weren't coming back from injury. They were coming back from a shutdown. So I feel it's a little bit different. It works better for them than it does for the Nets. But I still believe that there is a chemistry that has to be developed, a mental toughness collectively that has to be developed by playing together, and particularly at the offensive end. What's been demonstrated is that they rely so heavily on LeBron James to be that playmaker. They miss Rajon Rondo, for sure. So the question is, can LeBron come back from this, and can he suddenly ratchet up to the point where he's got to be Mr. Everything again offensively to get everybody their shots? That's the roll of the dice that they're playing with. Do I think it has a possibility of working out for the Lakers? Yes, I do. But I still don't believe that not playing for this length of time with the key parts of your team missing is a formula for success.
Okay, I put up my MVP rankings earlier because I think it's about most valuable player, and I'd give it to Chris Paul, who has 11 straight winning seasons.
And
Yeah. I'm a journalist. This is journalism on this show.
Thinking out of the box.
Well, Phoenix has been a tire fire for 11 years, 3 of those with Devin Booker. So I put Chris Paul number one. Then I have Jokic. I'm a huge Butler fan, Steph. LeBron, you don't want to hear my LeBron argument. You have Jokic one, Giannis. So you have Chris Paul behind Joel Embiid. Here's my argument. The Sixers have won this year. Sometimes when Joel misses games, they win. Phoenix can't win without Chris Paul. So why do you have Embiid ahead of Chris Paul?
Essentially because I think that he makes a bigger impact at both ends of the floor. Chris Paul's, and this is what's difficult, and I don't have a problem, I have a little bit of a problem with him being number one. The difficulty here is that all of these MVP candidates are flawed in some way. Harden and Embiid have missed too many games. Chris Paul, it's difficult to quantify what he does because so much of what he does, they're intangibles. And so how do you measure that? You can measure it and say, well, they're basically the same as last year, except last year they were, what, 34 and 39? And now they have one of the best records in the Western Conference. Okay, how much do we give to Chris Paul? And you're going to laugh, but how much do we give to Jay Crowder? Because I'll tell you that the Miami Heat are missing him in a big way. So how much do we just give in the natural evolution of DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker being such young players or Bridges? So that's where it's difficult for me to quantify exactly what Chris Paul is doing for them. And if I can't quantify it, how do I compare it to the other MVP candidates? Yeah. I'm not saying he's not an MVP candidate. He is.
Okay.
But
yeah,
number one.
All right. Well, I'm very gutsy. I put myself out there, Bucher. I got to go. Rick Bucher, Fox Sports. Good seeing you, buddy. Good things come to those who wait at Jersey Mike's. They also come to those who don't. Download app, order ahead, skip the line, cut to the chase by Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. Hour 3 on a Tuesday. Show flying by next.